May I have your attention, please?
Your attention, please?
May I have 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 your attention, please?
Okay, let us indeed hope we do have your attention. KPTZ airs, attention please, three times each week, actually. Good afternoon to you all. Airs, attention please, to bring our attention to the good work being done to enrich the lives of those of us whose homes are here in Jefferson County and whose homes are wherever they may be, those folks who listen on the World Wide Web. I'm Phil Andrus. With me for this week's Attention Please is Ariane True, who is Washington's Poet Laureate for this year and next, and Catherine Hunt, also a poet and the curator of the series Poetry on the Salish Sea, held at Wilderby Farm six times this summer, actually. Three more to go. Actually, four more to go, come to think of it. Ariane True will be featured in Poetry on the Salish Sea on Sunday, July 23rd, beginning at 3. I need to go to my Zoom screen and ask Ariane to unmute herself so that I can say hello, Ariane.
Howdy, hey.
Hey, very well. Welcome to the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
Catherine, welcome to the show, too.
Thanks. Glad to be here.
Oh, I'm going to turn you way up because you're soft-spoken. So we're going to be hearing poetry from these two women, and we're going to be having a conversation. I think what I'll do before we have poetry and the conversation is I'm going to take text from the Wilderby Farm webpage, probably pretty much as written, maybe a little editing to make it shorter, and read a bit about Ariane True and Catherine Hunt, and then we're going to have Then we will have two poems, one apiece, actually. So Ariane True is a queer poet and teaching artist from Seattle and has spent much of her time working with young people. She's received fellowships and residencies from Jack Straw, the Hugo House, Artist Trust, and the Seattle Repertory Theater, and is a proud alum of Hedgebrook and of the MFA program at the Institute of American Indian Arts. She lives in Tacoma with her cat, and I have now seen a dog as well. In May, she became Washington's Poet Laureate. Catherine Hunt lives here in Port Townsend someplace and is a writer and teacher, makes her home on the coast of the Salish Sea on the ancestral lands of the Tsklallam, Chimacum, and Suquamish peoples. Her first collection of poems, Long Way Through Ruin, was published by Blue Begonia Press in 2013. Catherine Hunt has worked as a waitress, a ship scaler, short order cook, bookseller, food bank coordinator, filmmaker, and a freelance writer. And I guess you put food on the table all the same, huh?
I do somehow manage most days.
Before we chat, I would like to hear a poem from each of you, starting with Ariane, please.
Sure. I can start with a really short little one. This one's called Pandemic, Even the Nice Days Were Inside, and it was written a few months into the start of the pandemic. The forest drifts in through the window, rising up the slope from narrow water, carving low points lower. Once with you, a waiting bird we watched, waiting to see how close it would come. Now that trail is gated by implication, too many people too close, path sated and spilling over. I am hungry for the touch of ferns, for half in stance and a lost world of coincidence I once felt standing all around me, like a stand of trees in the city.
The beginning of the pandemic. I was just thinking, I'm sure people have done this, written poems throughout the pandemic, and will, if they have not already, eventually publish a pandemic retrospect in poetry.
I have two poems that are explicitly about the pandemic that were both written within the first 2 months. But I think that's all that is specific to it.
So we wrote about other things. I cannot blame you for that, actually. Catherine Hunt, could you read for me, please?
I'd be happy to. And I just want to say hello to Ariane.
Hi, Catherine.
Hi. There is no door. I know the wound like a tree is alive, reaching down. The acanthus I planted in fall and forgot, now risen. Disquiet granted to prepare for possibility. Time calibrating itself to go wild over the earth. The way I once lifted a newborn to my face, breathed that humusy smell, her shattering cry, the lush incredulity of her pea-green soul. One day I may come to feel once again what it means to give everything away. Do not pretend beyond your native circumstance. Do not seek to enter the crowded field beyond your ken. Cromwell, that pretender to the crowded field. This waiting in silence is all that's asked of you. So little, really. There is no door. Everything you need is right here. You only need to sit and inquire. The witch hazel and the hellebores in bloom all through winter, the mind settling like white fluff from the poplars in St. Petersburg. That's how you got here, once a newborn yourself. This morning the ground is stained with purple crocus, petals as diplomatic as a moth. There is wonder in your blood, the home you make of it. A home you can't keep. That's how the world is made.
And thank you, Catherine. So you know, both of you know, the outline roughly here is I'm going to be talking with Ariane for a while. I'll ask her for a poem, talk to Catherine for a while, a bit about the series, Poetry on the Salish Sea, then go back to Ariane, then and ask for a poem from Catherine. I forgot to say that. Back to Ariane for a poem, a piece, after more conversation. We'll wrap it up right after that. So be ready with a poem. Those last two poems need to be no more than about a minute apiece. I have to time this whole show out to be kind of right on time. So keep that in mind as you're thinking what you would read. And with that, Ariane, I have a bunch of questions for you, actually. Poetry came into your life somehow, and at some point in your life. When and why? What do you think? When did it come to mean something special to you?
I think it came to mean something special to me because I stuck with it. I started writing poems in middle school, and I think a lot of us, when we're younger, we just do lots of different kinds of art because no one's told us we can't yet. And I kept doing it, and people saw me doing it, so they were like, hey, why don't you come do this over here? And then I found a lot of community around it and started finding ways of expression that were accessible to me in poetry because I was practicing it that weren't as accessible to me other places because I wasn't practicing them as much. And the community's been such a huge part of writing for me that I just kept sticking around. And then the more you learn, the more questions you have. You wonder, like, okay, well, someone did this. What's possible if I try part of their technique? What could I do with it?
And when did you feel like that was what you were going to be doing with your life?
According to my Common App essay for college, 17.
Really? And where did you go to college?
I went to college at Hamilton College, which is in upstate New York. It's very, very small.
Uh-huh. I've never heard of the school at all, and you studied probably something to do with poetry and literature, I would imagine.
I studied literature. I poo-poo a bit a lot of formal writing programs just because I feel like a lot of them don't include much reading, and that seems disappointing. So I studied comparative literature because a lot of the writing instruction I had grown up with as a teen was very focused on reading other people's work, seeing the stuff they're doing, and using that as like what we call a mentor text to try out things yourself. And so I wanted to study literature pretty seriously to get more ideas.
And you mentioned before that being part of a community, I will say a community of writers, and I but then gather a community of readers, is something that really has kept you moving forward in poetry.
Yeah, I have noticed, I think I probably first articulated this to myself at some point in college, but it was true before, it's been true since. I don't really write when I don't have community, and specifically writing community. It's one of my baseline requirements. Some people need time alone, some people need quiet, I need other people.
Now, I was thinking about your being poet laureate, and this will seem a most odd analogy, but I'm going to let you hear it anyway. And that is the similarity between being Miss Washington and being the poet laureate, meaning that there's probably a whole bunch of folks who have ideas for what you should do with your time. And you must be, in fact, I was really pleased and somewhat surprised that you were able to have time for us here today. You must be awfully busy. But I would think that not only are you busy, but it must crowd into your writing time.
Well, This is the thing that most people don't expect, and I think that's because most people don't understand much about teaching artists. A lot of people don't know that's even a job. So I've worked as a teaching artist for the last several years, and that is just such extreme hustle. You are working 3 to 5 or more different places with different organizations. You have a work schedule that changes sometimes every couple of weeks or more often. You're managing contracts everywhere. You're picking up speaking gigs. You're picking up little bits of writing, all that stuff. And so that's actually, and I also work as a freelance editor, so that's all much, much more hectic and time consuming because of all the, like, keeping it straight in your head and managing all those relationships than the WAPL program. So I think if someone was going from having just one job to this, it could be hectic. But I'm used to managing, like, 3 independent businesses by myself kind of functionally, and so this is less hectic to me.
Okay, so you do have time for writing. I was on the air last night, actually, until 10 o'clock with a woman who's a composer of classical, mostly choral music. And she does her composing, well, in fact, I had her on the air until 1 o'clock her time. She's in Philadelphia. And she said she does most of her composing late at night. How about you?
I think it depends. Going back to the community thing, if I'm going to a reading or an open mic, I always bring a notebook with me because I know something's just going to start sparkling and I'll need to jot down a note to come back to later. I write a lot on buses or when I'm waiting outside for things. Late at night, sometimes things will come to me, right as I'm about to fall asleep, some idea will be pay attention to me, and I'll be like, I will, because I know you're important, but I would like to go to sleep.
Yeah, I can understand that. And then you can't go to sleep, can you?
Yeah.
Yeah, maybe you can. Well, you're more disciplined than I am, and congratulations for that. What do you hope to accomplish as Poet Laureate? You're going to be, almost 2 years as Poet Laureate. You probably didn't have to take the position, though it is an honor. But what do you hope to accomplish? And maybe what stamp of yourself, unique to other Poet Laureates, would you hope to put on the position?
Well, I have 2 main things, and these are overarching projects. Every Poet Laureate, you do a project, at least in Washington, you do some sort of project. And so for my project, this will be out in September. I'm going to put together an anthology of writing, of poems specifically by queer writers from around Washington State. And that'll be available online where anyone around the world can access it. And it'll be kind of a swath of queer expression from Washington.
I'm trying to remember the name of a woman I've had on the air before from Squim. I'm sure you know who she is. I will think of it as I try to think of it, and probably will think of it just after we go off the air. Tell me about your work with young people, especially how you bring poetry into your work with them. And I'm thinking here especially of queer and transgender youth.
So I'm specifically hired most of the time to do poetry work with youth. Sometimes it's through the Writers in the Schools program. Sometimes it's with cohorts of dedicated youth poets who are already yes, I want this. I want to be doing poetry stuff. So the contract is kind of to focus on poetry. We do lots and lots of stuff. I get a lot of curricular freedom, which is really nice. So I can kind of follow what I'm interested in, what the kids are interested in. And I teach a lot of, I think people mostly teach what they read. And I read a lot of queer poets, and so I teach a lot of poems that are queer. And it's important to me that youth, but also that adults, see that you don't have to explicitly talk about a queer identity for a poem to be queer. It just has to be from someone who is queer.
Really? Now, that's interesting. I would have assumed the opposite, so that surprises me. Just giving a voice to somebody who may not otherwise have one.
I mean, I think everyone has a voice. It's just a lot of voices have been pretty systematically and aggressively silenced. And I think, I don't know if we've started shouting louder or if other people have started getting quiet when they should. But
So you're a member of the Choctaw and the Chickasaw Nations. Those are someplace far away from here, meaning I don't know where they are, actually. You could perhaps locate them in geography for us first and then tell me how that membership, how your being Native American may inform your poetry.
So our ancestral homelands are in kind of the Mississippi area, but we were forcibly relocated to Oklahoma with a lot of other tribes. And people always ask, specifically white folks ask, about how being Native impacts my poetry. And I feel like that's a question that only white folks ask.
I just asked it, though.
And I think that's something they should reflect on.
The fact that I asked it, you mean?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. Hmm.
Well, it's a fundamental assumption that this is a... It's a fundamental assumption that this is kind of this other thing, that it's not a baseline thing, and that assumes white as a baseline.
Uh-huh. Well, I'd love to have more of a chance to talk to you about this, because I think I need guidance in the direction that maybe I should head, but we don't have the time to do that. So I will ponder what you've said. Maybe you can find a poem or two that will help me do that. Let me see. You've opted to publish with Empty Bowl Press. And I know those folks. They're my neighbors, actually. Have you been to Holly and John's house?
I have not. I have met Holly and John, and they're so lovely. The poem that I read earlier was the poem that was published in one of the journals that Empty Bowl publishes.
Uh-huh. And do you know much about the heritage of Empty Bowl?
I know bits and pieces. I've done some copy editing for them, so I've definitely, I have spell-checked that history, but it's been a bit...
Well, the history parallels a lot of my... I'm not a poet, but a lot of the history of Empty Bowl parallels my life here. And that's the reason I ask. And for that, I guess we'll come back to you. I'm going to be stewing over what you said a moment ago for a long time. I don't know where I'm going to go with it, but I'm going to try. Could you read a poem, please?
Yeah, I sure can. Do you want a 2.5-minute poem or a 5-minute poem?
Let's have 2.5 minutes.
Sure. This is very much a queer pining poem. My kids really enjoy this one, so I like reading it. It's called This Kind of Reaching. Do you like the way it feels going into a dark room and your pupils expand to fill your eyes? Have you felt that? Will you feel it now that you know you might? I love that feeling. It almost makes me leave off the lights. How full a pupil can feel, the middle of each eye becoming as wide as it can so fast. So fast I feel the muscles move, feel how deep the darkness and the ways my eyes expand and push out, stretching to take in whatever scraps of light might come in at the corners. I love the texture of this kind of reaching. All I ever wonder is, have you seen this? Do you know what I put out in front of you? Do you know how to read it? What is the smile that traced your lips wide? Tell me the type. Tell me your eyes. Tell me the folds at the corners, the smallest pleats joy makes of your face. They get easier to see now. We are getting older, slowly, but I can feel it. The bones settle and it's warm here. Tell me which face to imagine when you read this. I don't know them all yet, but the ones I know are so wonderful to me. What are you wearing there on your mouth when we talk? How often my fingers come to my lips when I talk to you. Your body and text feel so physical to me. I think this is what you mean when you say you feel like we're always in person. When you write about how the nurses hold you up after fainting, I see the way their hands dig just a bit firmly into your arms, water break. How your arms hold the print of their hands holding you up, the slouch of your spine under its own weight partially propped, the way your hair does and doesn't fall across your face, drowsy eyes. All of it right there. How is a body so real in words at this distance? How is so real a body I've barely held only once? The simplest reality of this is that it's strange to be an unread notification on your phone, but to see your eyes on me anytime I move, to watch how you pick my voice from a crowd and answer it every time, that the buzz of my own phone when I know it's you kicks up dust in my heart, each buzz a breath hitch and felt thing. It feels too pedestrian to write about or somehow off limits, but your words are no less real for the supposed no poetry of how they reach me. The simplest reality of this is we are like any characters in any story. I will not ask you. I don't even know if you felt the question. I wonder if fall has started for you, if you change your blankets with the seasons, your coats. When I couldn't pick just one color, you offered me a rainbow. Paint across your opens hands in every color you had.
Thank you, Ariane. I'm going to come back to you with another question or two, but I'm going to turn to Catherine first. The series that you have curated, is that a word that I can use?
Yeah, sure. That's put it together.
You have
rounded up the poets. Yeah.
You've done this before.
I've pulled together poets for readings before. And I made films for years, so I had some experience rounding the cats for things.
Well, I know about herding cats, actually. How did poetry come into your life, and how have you sustained it through your life?
I suppose poetry came into my life through music when I was a kid. But I started writing it like Ariane when I was in middle school, a long time ago. And so I paid attention to it after that. And then I graduated high school in 1968, and women poets were really busting on the scene at that point. And I began to read, you know, Judy Gron and Diane Rakowski and Diane DePrima and many poets that I was discovering, and that really sent me on my way at that point.
Ariane said that the community of writers and readers has sustained her. Has that been the case for you as well?
Sure. Yeah, all along I've had friends who are poets, and we can read together and share poetry with each other and be part of something larger. Poetry itself is a way that human beings for millennium have spoken to one another. You know, it's song, it's the lyre, and so it always had a community component to it. You know, so when we speak our poems out loud, it's about speaking into a community.
As is so often the case when I'm on the air, I don't manage time all terribly well. So if you could rather quickly summarize the series, so I can ask one more question of Ariane before I ask each of you to read a shortish poem. We're going to be done with this before we've hardly even started.
Yeah, time goes by really fast.
It does.
Well, I started the Poetry on the Salish Sea series. There are six extraordinary poetry readings over the course of summer. We have four more left. And Casey Reeder and I, Casey Reeder is the co-owner with her husband Eric out at Wilderby Farm, and we cooked this thing up last winter. And it's really been successful. We've had really big crowds. The next one, Ariane will be there, along with Laura Day and Elizabeth White of Port Townsend. So I think it's going to be just a fabulous blockbuster poetry reading. And I'd encourage people to come early, bring your camp chairs or lawn chairs and or blankets. We read outside in the garden. It's really lovely, and it looks like we'll have some nice, cool, sunny weather.
So give me the dates for the rest of them, and then I'm going to ask Ariane a question.
You bet. Mm-hmm. Next Sunday, July 23rd, you'll get to hear the new poet laureate, Ariane True, and two other readers. August 20th, also a Sunday, September 10th, and October 1st. You can go to the Wilderby site or my website, katherinehunt.net, and you can see the whole series. They're always on Sunday, and they always start at 3 p.m. Yep.
And if you have any trouble figuring out how to find that website, write to me at cats@kptz.org, and I will help you find your way. Ariane, poetry, I do read poetry, but I have likened poetry, especially from my school experience, to the attempt of really smart people to make me seem like I'm stupid. That is, complicated poems that are hard to figure out, that we spend hours and hours kicking them apart. Your approach to poetry, and I think your sense of the role of poetry in society, is very different from that. And I appreciate the fact that it is. Could you speak to that point?
Yeah, I always get like so sad when I hear about folks' experiences with poetry being like the one you had. I think that's just like such a tragedy and a shame, because I think that poetry is for the people. It's often by the people. And I think it's, if you let it be something that you trust yourself in, and like let it be something that you take in through your body, you realize you know a lot. I think we teach poetry in traditional schools so much as you have to learn these fancy words, and then you have to analyze this to find how people are using these fancy words. And I'm like, you don't have to do that. Like, what matters is like, how do you feel when you read this poem? What do you think of? What does this spark for you? Does it bring anything back? Does it make you want anything? Like, those are the important things about when you read a poem. And for some reason, we often don't teach those. And I think that's really sad.
So do you get involved in analyzing poetry, taking poems apart, John Chardy, how does a poem mean, all that sort of thing?
I think what is fun to me, and I think is actually more productive and like more intellectual or whatever, is getting curious about a poem, like feeling those things first and then getting curious about how the poem made that happen, because that's kind of a masterful thing, that someone put words on a page and gave you an experience in your body. So I get curious about how they did that and how could I do that too. And those conversations are very fun, and the students are incredible at them.
I would like to do that with you. But, you know, I think we probably have an hour interview, and trying to squeeze it into 30 minutes, I must ask Catherine for a quick poem, please. I'm going to ask for the same from Ariane, and then we're going to be saying goodbye to each other before we knew we even started.
This has been really great, yeah. Phil. Thank you for doing this. I'll read a short poem called Reading Hamlet. Utterly empty, utterly a source, Seamus Heaney. When the others were asleep, sometimes in the silence, she took Hamlet from the shelf and read aloud the scenes where he renounced poor staggering Ophelia, or stalked the pre-dawn hours, consumed, wild to know who spilt his father's blood. And I would yawn and drift and nod until she sent me off to bed. One kiss, she'd say, and I'd begrudge her, who'd shown my father out the door, the dark play of that between us. In the moon moan hours of her dying, only the poems she'd given me, the boundless anguish of a prince, never nearer than those far-off castled nights.
And thank you, Catherine Hunt, and thank you for joining me on the show. And Ariane, one more poem from you, please.
Yeah, this is a shorty from the manuscript that I am currently sending around to presses. The manuscript is called Exhibits, and here's a little piece from it. And this was written at Hedgebrook on Whidbey Island. I have been a careful, patient tender. I have spent too long too close to my broken parts today. The edges catch. Once slow and kind, my hands asked to grab hot steel and slam it into the iron stove again and again and again. I don't. But such violence hides in my body. I wonder where it goes when I ask it to go home. Fireside.
Ariane, thank you very much for joining me on the show.
Thank you so much for having me.
I'd like to get together with you and chat someday, and perhaps one day that will come. Catherine, you suggested, in fact, provided a piece of music to wrap the show up. And no, I don't have the CD is in the CD player, and time is wasting away.
Yes, and this is a song by Sylvia Perez Cruz from her album Vestida de Nit, and it's she's a Catalan. She's from Spain, from Catalan.
And indeed, that is what's coming up in the background. I want to thank you all for listening to Attention Please here on KPTZ. Attention Please airs on Mondays at noon and on Mondays at 5 on KPTZ. It's going to be a podcast probably fairly shortly, maybe within a couple of hours today also. Oh, and by the way, I didn't mention show airs also Saturdays at noon. So thank you to Ariane True, Poet Laureate of Washington State, and Catherine Hunt, who is the curator and salutes and smiles broadly of poetry on the Salish Sea. I'm Phil Landris. Thank you all for listening. It's been a good afternoon together, and maybe one day we'll get all of us together and talk for an hour rather than just talk for this sprint through. Have a good afternoon to all of you.
Sounds good to me, Phil.